the buzzer been poured on its way. Oh my goodness.
They have to get it. There's no timeouts. They do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside. I'm Seth Greenberg with my man Dan Dokic, and today we're going to be joined by Dan Radakovic, a close personal friend. We worked together at Long Beach State and at Miami, and he's also a long-lost relative of Dan Dokic, which is what I just found out.
Hey, look, if you're Serbian, it ends in I-C-H, and you're from a steel town, chances are I'm your cousin. So chances are he's my cousin and I'm his. We don't know that, but I will tell you this, man. He's a smart dude, and it's going to be a great conversation. But the only problem, like most Serbians, he has great hair. God has not coiffed me that way.
No, but he is the athletic director at Clemson, one of the most powerful athletic programs in all of college sports, and he's going to give us some insights on when and if college football will come back and what they've done in terms of preparing to come back to campus during the pandemic. Let's welcome in Dan Radakovic with Dan Dokic here. They're talking like old home school week. They probably went to camp together when they probably went to camp together when they were kids or something. I mean, Aliquippa, Gary, Indiana. What about Plainview, Long Island? Come on, give me a break, huh?
There's no doubt we're related somewhere, so we could just start with that.
There's no doubt about it, but it's good to have Dan. Dan and I go way, way back from our days in Miami when I was an assistant coach there, and he worked for, my friend, lovely wife, Dan Radakovic, and my lovely wife, Patty, and Sam Jankovic, and then we worked together at Long Beach State, and we've been dear friends. But, Rad, ACC tournament, I know you were there. You get the word that they're canceling the tournament. What was going through your mind then, and like now fast forward to today, what you're dealing with?
Well, it was really kind of surreal on a couple of ways. First of all, the drive from the hotel to the arena. There was nobody on the road because the game had already been kind of pulled together as a player parents and just a few fan kind of a thing. So we got to the arena, there may be 700 people in that 22,000 person Greensboro Coliseum. So that was kind of strange to begin with. And then when we got there, we were immediately asked to go into a meeting with Commissioner Swofford. So David Coburn, the AD at Florida State, and myself go back into one of the ante rooms in the Coliseum, and the commissioner's there, ESPN's in the background with a lot of the news of the day, the other conferences that are looking to cancel their tournaments. We're ready to tip off in about 35 minutes. We pulled together a call for all the athletic directors within the league, and it was during that point in time when it was decided that the tournament would be canceled. And that Florida State, and rightfully so in their circumstance, would be declared the champion. And then we had all thought that that was going to be okay because the NCAA tournament was going to come shortly thereafter. And then maybe 3 or 4 hours later on our way back to Clemson, we found out that the NCAA not only canceled the basketball tournament, but all the spring events. So that was a lot to handle in one day, not only from an administrative perspective, just with all the different circumstances we were dealing with, but certainly for the student athletes. Walking into Brad Brownell's locker room to let him know, hey, the tournament's going to be canceled. And as he was giving a talk to the players, was difficult. And then coming back to Clemson and the next day, the Friday morning, getting together with all the head coaches who had to give that kind of notification to their student athletes was particularly difficult.
Dan, I've said on my radio show, and I've said on ESPN, amazing what you don't know. Like, I initially thought that, wow, this is a bit of an overreaction. Not necessarily the tournament, because we had broadcast the night games, and we knew there were going to be no fans and all that. But were you surprised how quickly spring sports were canceled? Because it seemed to me like an overreaction. Smart reaction, obviously, looking back on it. But it seemed at the time to be like, wow, this is a race to panic. How'd you view it?
Well, I think it was, at that time I thought it was kind of quick. But then if you take a step back and understand how the NCAA is funded. All of the dollars that come forward to the NCAA really come from the men's basketball tournament. Everything else that is done, really, the cost of championships is one of the biggest costs that the NCAA has. So very quickly, they were able to understand in conversations, I imagine, with the broadcast partner that that was going to be a significant part of their revenue that is taken out. So now they don't have that to put on the rest of their championships. So given all the other pieces of information about closing schools and going to online, et cetera, they made the right decision. There's no question about that. Whether it was one day or the next day, probably in hindsight doesn't make much difference. But the idea that there was not going to be that other revenue to either distribute to the schools or allow the NCAA to run those tournaments in a first-class manner, as they've always done, probably had something to do with it as well.
So then the white elephant in the room is, all right, where you end up dropping spring football, right? I mean, basically you have to cancel spring football. And now that's the next – you're into the next season. You're into the fall season. As an athletic director – like, I know we moved this podcast to 4:30 because you had an all-staff meeting. What are you dealing with on a daily basis, whether moving forward in the athletic department?
Well, one of the things that's important for us is we're a part of our institution. And our institution is getting ready to, on June 1st, open up phase one, return to active work. And, you know, we're going to begin to allow student athletes to come back for voluntary workouts in a very meticulous timed way over the next couple of weeks. And that's really, you know, what we've been spending our time with, how to bring them back, how to safely bring them back, allow them to get back into workouts for football and basketball, and then our other fall sports shortly thereafter. So all of those details in working with our institution have been things that have taken up the vast majority of the last couple of weeks.
Hey, Dan, what's gone into it? What's gone into bringing students back?
Well, we have to understand, you know, safely how to bring them back into our training facility. In doing so, we have to understand what our testing protocols are going to be, the social distancing, how many people can work out at one time, how many people can be in a building, who can be in the building. So all of those variables have to be answered before we can say, okay, let's bring this group of student athletes back for training. And, you know, one of the things you do in the preseason to begin with is have preseason physical. So we're going to start that process along with the testing as our student athletes come back beginning June the 8th.
So, like, you're bringing these guys back, and, like, that's one thing to bring them back. All right. The next thing is, obviously, you go from bringing them back in June to potentially playing a game like in September. So, like, how do you go from there where you're literally just hoping you can be together in small groups to bringing a team together, meeting rooms together, contact together, and everything that goes into it? I mean, like, how do you go through? Is that something you got to go through on campus, within the athletic department, within the state? I mean, what are all the bells and whistles and avenues you got to deal with?
Well, I don't think this is a 3-hour podcast, so I can't go through all those details. But I will tell you that we take input, Seth and Dan, from each one of the areas that you've talked about, from our university, from our state, Department of Health services within South Carolina, CDC, all of the guidelines that are put out there are given. And then we take those guidelines and figure out how to implement them, you know, through testing, through the protocols of social distancing that I talked about before. But this is a process. This is the first step of the process. You can't play a game until you have people come back, and specifically in the sport of football, the football coaches and the NCAA, Dr. Brian Hainline, talk about a 4-week return to play to acclimate them, you know, in a setting that allows them to be able to safely compete. So you need to make sure you have time for the student athletes to get back into shape, to be able to compete safely come whenever that is. That's the next step. Now that we've brought people back in and they're either going to go to summer school or they're going to voluntarily work out until those other timelines are pulled together, now you have to look at, okay, how are we going to and what are we going to have as it relates to a game atmosphere? Will there be people in the stands? How many people will be in the stands? When will we start? How will we make sure that both teams are safe to be able to participate in that game? And we think a lot about football, but we also have the other Olympic sports that compete in the fall that'll have to go through the same regimen.
Hey, Dan, I had a conversation with Mitch Daniels, who I think is one of the smartest guys around, the president of Purdue, former governor. He and I were talking, and he told me that he absolutely could see, even if students aren't back on campus, he could absolutely see college football being played. His point is, look, a lot of students take online classes anyway. Where are you at with that? President of Michigan said he didn't think so. What is your thought on all that?
You know, we've talked about it as a campus, and our campus is really moving forward with instruction this fall, bringing students back, having them here on campus. Now, there could be a blend of you know, well, as you said, a lot of students take online classes to begin with. So, you know, I think there'll be that natural hybrid that occurs there. But, you know, everything that we're doing, and part of the reason why we canceled all of the extracurricular camps on campus, which included athletic camps this summer, while we don't have any other events on our campus this summer, outside of people who are, you know, part of the Clemson community, is to make sure that we are as ready as we can be for our students to come back in August so that we can have the best opportunity to have a normal type opening come August and whatever we could move forward with in the fall.
Then, like housing for your football guys or your fall sports, because they're the first ones, or even your basketball guys, will you change their housing arrangements to almost try to put them in a little bit of a bubble, or are they just going to kind of move on back onto campus like they've always been?
Well, some of our student athletes, especially in those sports of football and basketball, they don't live on campus after their freshman year. You know, a lot of them will move into the community if they meet certain criteria. So they're in the community right now. A lot of those folks are here in the Clemson community and have been for an awful long time. So they've already been a part of our community. The incoming freshmen, et cetera, second summer session starting, they'll be back on campus and inside of our dormitories because they'll open for that limited summer session opportunity later in June.
What was a financial hit? I mean, you hear all this conversation about if things don't, you know, the NCAA takes this hit without the tournament, all that. What's the reality for, as opposed to the myth?
Well, I think that when you look at a school like Clemson, you know, we get about a third of our overall revenue. Well, more than half. I'll just put it that way. More than half of the revenue comes associated with the sale of tickets and donations for tickets within our fundraising organization. So if we have a limited football season, certainly the tickets will be refunded to those games where people can't attend. And then our fundraising organization will work with our donors because they'll have obligations. Our fundraising organization has obligations like paying for scholarships, like our academic service area, like our facility debt service that we have. So those are obligations that will stay regardless of whether we play football or not. So they're going to have to work with the goodwill of our donors. And we have incredible donors. Seth knows a lot about the IPTE program. And, it's been one of the great fundraising organizations in the country, probably the oldest, started in 1934. So we have a lot of good history associated with that organization. But I think more so than that, our folks understand that Clemson as a university and Clemson athletics, as kind of our core principles that people talk about, we want to make sure that we do the right thing. And as we go to our donors and we've sent out, you know, information to them, both on tickets and donation, the real story that goes there is we're going to do what's right. we're going to do what's right by our donors and our student athletes. So that gives folks a lot of comfort that even during these difficult times or times when maybe things aren't normal, A, we need their help, and B, that they know that this is a long run circumstance.
Dan, what do you make on a home football game? Like, what's your gate on a home football game? I mean, that place is definitely, what's that place see?
You know, I think, you know, once, if it's a conference game, once you pay all the expenses and things just from the tickets, we're probably $2.25 million $2.25 million. A non-conference game where you have to pay a bigger guarantees, less than that. But then when you throw in all of the donations associated with suites and premium seats and things, you're at a much higher number. I couldn't tell you right off the top of my head, which is why I talked in big numbers. You know, our donations and our tickets are about half the revenue that come into our athletic program.
Does that impact some sports? I'm like, have you guys to the point where, and I'm not asking you what sport, but I mean, are you guys to the point where you guys have to look at a lot of different models?
No, not as it relates to sports sponsorships right now. You know, we sponsor 19 sports here at Clemson. We want to make sure that we continue down the path of staying at that number. But that's today, you know, with how we're trying to plan and move forward with a full or close to full football season. If something occurs, a second wave, you know, a new variable goes into the equation. You have to think of different items, you know, as it relates to your staff, your travel, your everything around you has to come into play. But I will tell you that, we've been very fortunate. We have some good reserves, that we've been able to build up over time, that have allowed us to, weather the storm thus far. And then we'll see where we go as we get closer to the football season.
You expect football to be played in fall?
I do.
Full season? On time?
Yes. As we sit here on May 26th, on time, full season.
Yeah, right. But as you said, I mean, a lot of things you can predict. I mean, but this isn't one of them. You can't. You can't.
Yeah, on time, full season, how many people in the stands?
Right.
Yeah, that one's a little tougher. But, you know, I think that, you know, if we continue to have the trends of opening up the states and now we're starting to get figures back from states that have opened up over the last couple of weeks and they still seem to be holding steady, those are all really positive things that we hope that those trends continue to occur.
Hey, can I ask you, you're going to have, I guess, for a little bit. The NLI thing doesn't come in, or NIL thing doesn't come in. Does it come in during Trevor Lawrence's time? And if so, you're going to have another Trevor Lawrence. How involved are you in helping coaches with this whole NIL thing?
Well, that's a great question, Dan. Trevor will be eligible for the draft come January.
Yeah.
I really hope he wants to stay at Clemson.
Right.
But, you know,
Good luck.
Yeah. he's an outstanding young man. But I'll tell you one of the things that we've done. NIL is incredibly complicated. And I don't know that it's going to affect the number of student athletes. Maybe that people think it's going to affect. It'll help a little bit. But, you know, what we want to be able to do is talk to our student athletes. And we've already had two or three sessions where we brought in some student athletes to talk about, hey, how do you think this is going to affect your life? Because, you know, student athletes come to college for a couple of reasons. Number one, they want to come here to get an education. Number two, they want to hone their craft in the sport that they participate in hopes of, in some ways, making a career out of those sports. And if we're talking specifically about basketball and football, that's an awful lot of time that they put in there. So where do you have the opportunity to do some of the marketing type pieces that could be available? You know, that's going to be something that is, you know, really we have to know and understand. I had someone ask me the other day, well, you know, the local car dealer is going to give the basketball or football player an awful lot of money. And, you know, that's going to set things apart. And I said, well, That's unless the local car dealer's daughter plays lacrosse, and then the number one lacrosse player in the country is going to get a lot of money. It's just your point of view. That's just how it is. So I think that a lot of this stuff is going to work out. NIL in year two and three is going to look a lot different than NIL in year one. Whether there's third-party clearinghouses, which I think may have some really good educational pieces and opportunities for students, whether those come into play, that'll be important as well. But I think our student athletes, and they ask a lot of great questions when we were together, things like, hey, do I have to pay tax on this money? Yes, you do. We have a number of student athletes who are Pell recipients, and you guys both know that. And yeah, it's a wonderful program from the federal government. Well, once you earn a little bit more money, does that affect your Pell grant for the student athlete? So there's a lot of factors that will come into play for individual student athletes as to whether or not the opportunity that is put in front of them really will help them in the long term.
Dan, how are you going to deal with agents on campus? Because if these kids are going to have agents, all right, and an agent is going to want access, because we saw this one last a couple weeks ago happen with Georgetown with a kid, McClung, who was leaving, and like that guy became his mouthpiece. How are you guys going to deal with agents and interfacing with the agents, either with the coaches or with the athletic department? Because that could be a disaster.
It could be, Seth. It really could be. And, we have certification programs for agents now. I think that has to get stepped up. I know that's a very administrative answer. But the reason I'm giving you that is I don't have a great answer to your question. It's going to be really, really difficult. I know that there are coaches that just won't deal with it. That's just how it is. It's hard enough now with coaches and in the basketball world, the AAU coaches, moms, dads, uncles, aunts, cousins, whoever is really someone for these particular student athletes. And then you throw in another party that is actually being compensated for that. That becomes real difficult. And I think that kind of moves away from college athletics. So I hope that as we continue to go down this road and we define NIL better, are there opportunities for student athletes? Yes. Should they take advantage of those opportunities that other students have? Yes. Is that the absolute tip of the pyramid of people who will be affected? I think that's a yes too. So how we deal with that, I think the only time will tell.
I got one for you. The one-time transfer exception. It got passed over till January. Coaches think it's a disaster. Dan and I would say we think it's a disaster, yet it's gaining momentum through whomever. What's your guys' take? What's Dabo and what's Brad's take on one-time transfer exception? Because, it will create it'll eliminate mid-major sport, and it'll create free agency, we think. Right, Dan?
Yes, sir.
Well, Dabo is, and Brad, we've had some conversations. I've had them with each of them. Dabo certainly has been out front in saying that, exactly what you guys have said. Well, it's been interesting. Would it affect Clemson the same way it might affect another school? Maybe not. But for all of college football, I think that would be it would be a negative. But I've been around NCAA stuff for 30 some odd years, as you guys have. Sometimes these things gain momentum and life of their own. I don't know a way out. I can't find the back door on this, as it relates to the one-time transfer. The idea of making the student athlete have a year residency on campus makes a lot of sense to me, so that they don't go through their first workouts or their first fall and maybe not play as much, and then all of a sudden they decide to take the best offer that comes in front of them. I think that you need to have time for the really good coaches and really good programs to instill their culture within student athletes. On the other side of the stick, there have been a lot of programs, that have had one-time transfers for many, many years. and they've been able to survive. So, you know, it's a different circumstance, but both of you guys were involved in the game when Prop 48 came forward and the world was ending. It was over. We could not get past it. And the same thing with cost of attendance. When cost of attendance came in, it would just break things apart. We survived both of those. And while I do think that there needs to be some additional guardrails around the transfer, we'll get through this one as well.
Well, Rad, the last question I got for you, did you ever touch Howard's Rock and run down like full speed and fall or anything?
No, I haven't. I think I'll save that for when I'm about ready to adios and go 88 and out the gate. I'll go up, touch Howard's Rock, run down the hill, and then just keep running right out, right out the home tunnel into the car and then out to the lake.
Dawkins, if you do a Clemson game, that's something you would do.
There's 1,000% I would do that.
Absolutely.
Are you nuts? Yeah, I would.
It's phenomenal.
Two things you got to do when you go to a when you do a Clemson game. You got to eat a meal with Marty Simmons, and you got to touch Howard's Rock and start running. Hell yeah!
No question about it. And there's a little.
Don't you have to bring one of your relatives with you, Dan? I mean, like, aren't you guys connected some way?
Somehow.
I'm sure somewhere along the way.
It's really good. You know how much respect he has for you. He'd have to go to the bathroom in the middle of this interview.
I know.
I appreciate that.
Hey, I didn't know how Zoom really worked and what you could really see. And next thing you know, it wasn't good, Dan. It was just
it wasn't good. You gotta press the right buttons, guys.
I know. But hey, thank you so much and congratulations on all the success that you guys have had at Clemson, man. It's really, as a humongous college football fan, it's so much fun to watch your team and Dabo and the way he goes about business, man. It's awesome. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, guys. And I'm fortunate to – I have worked with great ones, and I'm still working with great ones. And it's really been a pleasure. I so enjoy this world of college athletics. It's a great place to be.
Hey, D-Squared, the body sculpture shirt, is this a new thing?
Yeah, baby.
Come on. What are you doing? We get paid for this a lot. Can I get a little kickback?
Truthfully, yeah, we do. We got paid for it. It's a client. And, hey, look, if this is still on our podcast, if anybody wants to be a client of ours, please reach out. Because I haven't eaten spinach since 1973, and I'll endorse spinach, so it doesn't matter to me. It just, you know.
Hey, I just got a bagel. Hey, Bagel Brothers, I just got a bagel deal. The guy from Seth Greenberg from New York has got to get a New York bagel deal.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. So, hey, he says, unless something crazy happens, he can see them starting and playing football. What would you take?
You know, that seems to be the momentum, Seth. It really does. And I don't think this. I don't think we're in position anymore where one guy getting the coronavirus is going to shut it down. I don't, Seth. Obviously, Rudy Gobert back in the day, he got the virus, shut everything down. Probably a really good thing based on, you know, what we know now. But I think there's a big difference now. And I don't think one guy getting it is going to shut it down. I do think, and everybody is going to agree with what Dan said, like, hey, look, a month from now, this may look totally different, good or bad.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yep.
So nobody knows. But I think it's – how do I put this? I think it's a little like restaurants. Like, you know, restaurants start at quarter capacity, go to half capacity. Maybe you'll see that in football. Maybe you'll see, hey, we start with no fans. Then we're going to add 100 fans a section. Then we're going to add more. I don't know, but I do think as we sit here right now, we'll see it. I do.
What was your take on the Michigan president? I mean, I think they're going to be back in school, but I mean, like I talked to Ed Cooley today, and he gave me a great point. He said, I said, well, you bringing your guys back on campus, June 8th. He goes, I don't know. He said, we've got to go through certain steps. First, we've got to see if our state will allow it. Then we've got to see if the university will allow it. And then we've got to get cleared through the league. I mean, like, the statement from the Michigan president, is that more coming from because of where the state is right now?
I think so. I think that you're looking at a governor who is, whatever the backstory is, pretty much locking the state down. You know, if you're a fan of Governor Whitmer. You're saying, I think it's Whitmer. You're a fan of what she's doing. She's erring on the edge of, on the side of caution. If you're not a fan of her, then you go the other way. So I don't think there's any question that's based on what the governor is. And I don't think he's wrong. And I don't think what I said about Mitch Daniels saying he thinks, you know, even if students aren't back, I don't think either are wrong. I think, you know what it is? I think it's two opinions, and I think we'll see. And I don't think anybody truly knows. You're asked to give a opinion. The governor of Michigan, the president of Michigan gave one, and the president of Purdue gave me a different one. So, you know, it's who knows? I don't think anybody really truly knows. And I'll tell you something else that's interesting, Seth. Everybody tells me, well, I'm just going to listen to Fauci. I'm going to listen to, well, he's been wrong too. I mean, that's how complicated this thing is. He's been wrong, and all of a sudden he's starting to say, hey, you got to go outside. Because, you know, I think in San Francisco we've seen more suicides than we have seen deaths by the coronavirus. So this is deep, man. But I from a simple sports perspective, I think we're going to see baseball coming up, hockey. I think we're going to see the NBA try to make their playoff system work, and I think we're going to see football.
And we're going to probably see the TBT.
Yeah, I hope we do, because I think
it'll be interesting to see, like, as all these sports come back, it'll be interesting to see a couple things. One, the discipline of the guys playing, like the concept of the NBA going to Disney. If you think about a wholesome place to go to, they've got great facilities. I don't know how they're going to do it, but I guess they're going to actually potentially bring families. How long do you think teams need to get ready to compete?
Seth, in the NBA, they don't have a training camp.
That's why I agree with you. So why do they say it's a month
when
they do individual workouts before? But I mean, they go 3 days. They're playing exhibition games.
That's what I'm saying. And people think that not every league, in fact, no leagues are like the NFL where there's 6 weeks. Like the Major League Baseball where there's 6 weeks of training camp. Yeah, there are some training camp, 3 weeks. You got four games in the NFL. But let's be honest, the four games in the NFL is really a game and a half for the players that start. For the players that are going to make the team, the rest is kind of make some money, some window dressing, and away you go. Major League Baseball, I was talking to Danny Plezak of Major League Baseball Network today. He thought they needed 3-4 weeks for pitchers. Don't know if they're going to get that. Expand the rosters and let's go. To me personally, I'd say the NBA. If you told me the NBA was going to start, Seth, with training camp on July 1st, June 1st, I would say they should be good to go June 1st to June 10th. Let's go. That's what I think, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I would think some of these guys would say, now the baseball thing's interesting because, like, besides the pitchers, like, if you just added pitchers and put, like, all starting pitchers on a 50-pitch pitch count or three innings, it was the same for every team, why would you need 4 weeks?
See, if I were a guy that was a workout maniac and really, truly loved my craft and understood this, I'd be angry. You know, I was a starting pitcher. I'd be angry that some fat guy that didn't work out like I did has the same rule as me. Wait a second. I work my brains out getting ready because that's what a pro does. Look, if Major League Baseball players or NBA players don't know that it's a real possibility, Seth, that their league is starting within a month, or at least their training camp is starting within a month, then they're not paying attention. And they get what they deserve. If I'm an agent of, let's take Victor Oladipo, who's a workoutaholic and all this, but if I'm his agent or I'm an agent of an NBA guy, I'm going, hey man, you got to get ready. Hey, this is starting. You've got to have your body ready because this is an opportunity. Look, I look at it this way. This is an opportunity for the Denver Nuggets, the Indiana Pacers, teams that aren't big market teams, to go win something because of how weird this whole thing is. Usually, okay, it's going to be LeBron in the West. You know what I mean? The usual suspects.
Everything's going to be neutral court game.
And everything's neutral court. Yeah. And some guys are going to work out. Some guys, huh?
Aren't the NBA practice facilities open now? Indianapolis is not. So Indianapolis in general is still pretty much locked down.
Indianapolis, Indiana, Marion County, where I live, is different than basically every other place. Now, I don't know if the Pacers, well, I know a lot of Pacers are going up to the next county. I think it's Hamilton County is the next county and working out at a place up there. But the facility, I believe, here in Indianapolis is not open to the Pacers. I just saw where, what, New York, New Jersey just opened up their place.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't
think it did.
Every other place in Indiana. But Marion County was deemed as a hot spot. In fact, that's one of the debates in the NFL is what's going to happen. Because right now, New Jersey can open, right? New York can open. The Colts can't. They're in Marion County. So, you know, is that an unfair advantage? I don't think it is, but
can they move to a different area? I mean, why can't the Colts create a training facility? I mean, although in terms of for conditioning, it's not like they don't have the money.
No, they did. They don't train in Indianapolis. They train up at a place, Grant Park, this huge facility. They have all their training sessions up there. So they do that when they are, when things are normal. But right now, the building where they work, you can't be in it except for maintenance, ground crew, that kind of thing. That's it.
All right. Last question for you. This is the most important question that you're going to answer today. Will you attend a Cubs game this year? That's a big question. You don't get that question every day.
No, I will. If the Cubs are playing, Illinois is locked down too now. If the Cubs are playing, I will be for sure at least once at Murphy's right across the street. I can guarantee you that. I'll be at a Cubs game in September, early October. Yes, they will be opened up enough and I'll weenie my way into some type of ticket. Yes, I will be. Yes.
You will have a media credential somehow, some way.
I'll be something.
All right. Last question. Junior and you, wins and losses.
He had a bad weekend, Seth. Andrew Dockich had a bad weekend against his father. We played 36 yesterday. My brother and I against my nephew, who's Andrew's age, and Seth. I'm not going to lie. If I shoot above 82 now, it's a bad round. I'm pretty salty right now.
Oh, you got that. Oh, you went from you were giving up golf to now you're dialed in.
Couple adjustments. Junior, let's put it this way. Junior has been Venmoing me the amount of money he lost. Hey, but let me ask you this. What are you hearing about the TBT? A lot of people ask.
I will say that tune in tomorrow because there is a good chance there will be an announcement tomorrow about the TBT.
Well, I must not be working at the TBT this year.
Oh, no, you're working at the TBT.
Oh, okay.
And
Announcement tomorrow.
There's going to be an announcement of some sort tomorrow. I'm not sure they know exactly the venue, but I think that the announcement tomorrow will be that basketball will be played again, is my gut feeling.
I just looked at my email, Dan Friel, TBT, important conference call tomorrow.
Bam. There you go. I love when that happens.
I love when that happens.
Breaking news once again. All right, B-Squared.
If you're listening to this podcast, can you tell your friends about it? Because it's some good ish we're giving you here.
Yeah, this is you don't get this everywhere. There's no doubt about it. My man Dan Radakovich, button down. He's the AD of one of the most powerful athletic programs in the world. And what Dabo wants, Dabo gets.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.